And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, positive talk radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is all business. Each of my guests is discussing a business topic in his specialty. My next guest is called the Back of the Envelope Consultant. He'll show us how images can help us determine what to do when words don't work from his latest book, Blah, Blah, Blah. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Dan Rome is the author of the international bestseller, The Back of the Napkin, Fast Company's Innovation Book of the Year, and Amazon's number 5 best-selling business book of 2008. He's the founder and president of Digital Rome Incorporated, a management consulting firm that uses visual thinking to solve complex problems. Dan has helped leaders at Microsoft, Boeing, eBay, Kraft, all of the major companies, including the U.S. Navy and the United States Senate, to solve some of the problems with simple pictures. Dan and his whiteboard have appeared on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, Fox, and NPR. His latest book, as I said, is titled Blah, 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 What to Do When Words Don't Work. He lives and works in San Francisco, joining us from the Bay Area. How are you today, Dan?
Bill, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being our guest. Love your book. Of course, I'm partial to your books because I think visually. It's a lot easier for me. So I love the books, and it's an easy read because it's filled with lots of pictures and lots of diagrams. So that is great. Thank you for that. But let's dive into some of the questions here that I've got for you. We're fortunate to be living now where we have access to all of the collected wisdom and all the collected knowledge that people that came before us via the internet, via 24 hours news cycles, books, magazines, et cetera. Etc. But you think that we'd be the most well-informed, effective generation in history, but you claim that we're not. The problem is the more that we hear, the less intelligent we seem to be. Why is that?
Well, Bill, you just named it. I mean, it's incredible. You know, I can be sitting here on the internet, any one of us can, and we can pull up quotations from Shakespeare. We can go back and look at what Einstein actually said. We can look up, you know, what Adam Smith was talking about. We can do it in 15 seconds. You would think that we'd be brilliant. And yet we don't have to go any further than just about anything that comes out of Washington, D.C. these days to realize we are not any smarter than we've ever been. In fact, I think you nailed it a moment ago. It really does begin to seem like the more that we hear, the less that we know. And I put it in a more mercenary way. I'm starting to think that the more we talk, the less we're actually learning how to think.
Oh, that is a disturbing thought in and of itself. But I'd have to agree with you. It's almost information overload, and words aren't sufficing right now. That's why I like the title of your book, Blah, 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 because all of this information coming at us so fast, it really does start to become blah, blah, blah. And so much of what we see and what we hear today really sounds like this droning on. For you, blah, blah, blah describes really the misuse, the overuse, or the abuse of the spoken language. In fact, you've got 3 stages of blah, blah, blah. What are the 3 stages of blah, blah, blah?
Well, the 3 stages, as measured on my blah-blometer, which is my own bull bleep detector, you know, modified from Ernest Hemingway was the first one who said, you know, every author needs to have a really good bull detector, and so this is mine. So the blah-blometer helps us measure the words that are coming in, especially those that we don't understand, and says, well, why don't we understand them? We don't understand them because we're stupid? No, we're pretty smart. The problem is that with so much coming in, we have to be really careful about what we're listening to. So the 3 layers, the 3 stages of blah, blah, blah are as follows. The first stage, which is just blah, is when things are simply boring. Someone overuses words to describe something that should be pretty simple or pretty compelling. So it's so boring, we just stop listening to it. That's level 1. Level number 2, blah, blah, is where someone uses words to mask the fact that they don't actually have a clue what they're talking about. So there's lots of examples of this. You usually can find them, sadly, in marketing, where you hear a whole lot of flowery language to describe essentially nothing. And I consider that the second level blah, blah, it's not necessarily evil. It's not necessarily insidious. It's just that people are layering on additional words and descriptions that aren't really serving us much purpose because there's really nothing behind them. Where things get really slippery is where we move into the third level of blah, 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 blah cubed, which is where people are using their words to actually mask the fact that their underlying idea is pretty rotten. I'm so afraid to come right out and say what I really want to say that I will come up with a whole lot of interesting-sounding, euphemistic, backhanded ways of describing it so that I'll completely mislead you from what I'm actually trying to say. And that's when things, in my opinion, start to get really bad. And, you know, we see many examples of all three levels throughout the day, things that are coming at us from politicians or from marketing or from business people or even from ourselves. And the critical issue behind the Blah-Blah-Meter was to try to help us determine, when we hear something that doesn't quite ring true, or we hear something that seems overly verbose, let's take a moment and think through where on the Blah-Blah-Meter does that really sit, and how much thought do we really need to give to deciphering it?
All right. My guest is Dan Rome. So, Dan, you've laid out the problem very succinctly. I like your blah-blah-meter. I got to get that down right. And I like the fact, the three levels that you have, boring, foggy, and misleading. So the big question is, what's the antidote to blah-blah-blah?
Well, that, of course, is what the book is really about. The book, blah-blah-blah, is one quarter stating the problem. Because let's face it, you can't solve a problem until you've got a pretty clear statement of what the problem is. So first quarter of the book says, here's blah, blah, blah. The remaining three quarters of the problem of the book say, okay, how are we going to solve it? My solution is very simple. It's something I call vivid thinking. Vivid as a kind of a mnemonic device, an acronym, V-I-V-I-D, and it stands for visual, verbal, interdependent thinking. And what that means in plain English is, we cannot believe that we actually have our idea really well thought through until we can both describe it with words and with pictures. And why is that true? Because our mind is not just a verbal machine. In fact, the part of our mind that handles verbal communication is actually very small relative to the parts of our mind that handle the visual. That is not something that we talk about when we're in school. If we think about kids from the time they head into kindergarten until they come out of college, for the most part, most of the time, we are teaching, testing, and training our kids to use the verbal parts of their mind. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we need to be literate. We need to be able to have effective conversation. We need grammar to do that, etc. But what is wrong is that during that same period, we give nothing. Not a single tool, not a shred of grammar, no practice whatsoever on improving and utilizing the visual parts of our mind in a helpful, specific way. And that's what I'm trying to introduce through these books. So solution to too much words is not more words, not even necessarily smarter words. The solution to too many words is fewer words, but those words are going to be much more powerful because those words are backed by the full power of the pictures that come out of our visual mind. And the two work in concert in a truly complementary way so that a vivid idea emerges, as I say, when we can talk about it and we can draw it.
My guest is Dan Rome, author of the book, Blah, 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 What to Do When Words Don't Work. Let's conceptualize this for my listeners, if we can, Dan. You've got some great examples of vivid and non-vivid language in the book. Let's talk about Leonardo da Vinci's original design for the parachute. Why has that endured over all the centuries? What makes that vivid?
Well, okay, anything that has to do with Leonardo. Leonardo, you know, clearly ranks among one of the greatest thinkers of all time. And if you look through his notebooks, if you ever study anything about Leonardo, he was absolutely the poster child for vivid thinking. He wrote a lot and he drew a lot. And his notebooks are full of the two types of communication, the visual and the verbal, side by side. Now, I looked through, you know, facsimiles of his notebooks because I'm fascinated by the work and the fact that he was able to draw and write so well about so many different topics. And my mind just kind of set upon this very, very simple little drawing of a little stick figure dangling below what looks like a kind of a pyramid-shaped parachute. And it turns out that this parachute was drawn hundreds and hundreds of years ago. It's the first record we have of someone thinking through what a parachute might look like. And it comes from Leonardo. And next to the little sketch is a tiny little caption that says, you know, with a certain amount of muslin cloth suspended above someone, anyone could jump off a high height and survive the fall. And, you know, it probably would have become a forgotten little footnote in history had not someone 300 years later in France actually tried it. It took 300 years before anyone thought they were crazy enough to actually suspend themselves underneath a parachute and jump off a building, but they finally did. And the remarkable thing that I really love about it, number one, the original drawing and caption, remarkably vivid. But number two, they really have never changed. Here we are 500 years later, and if you look at a parachute today, structurally and conceptually, it's pretty much identical to that original vivid idea of Leonardo. The materials have changed. Some of the specifications have changed. It's evolved a long way in detail, but underneath, the vivid idea of the parachute has never really changed. He nailed it the first time.
Well, Dan, you're also fascinated with somebody whose work hasn't endured quite as long as Leonardo da Vinci's, but somebody that we all know, and that's Dr. Seuss, and in particular his seminal book, The Cat in the Hat. Why does that really represent vivid thinking in your mind?
Dr. Seuss, Bill, thank you for bringing that up, because Dr. Seuss, if we look to the modern day for the poster child of vivid thinking, it is Dr. Seuss. Ted Geisel, who had been a children's illustrator, was kind of pulled out of relative obscurity in the 1950s, when a book publisher in New York read a study that said the main reason back in the 1950s that kids were struggling with learning to read is because the pictures in their school primers were really boring. You know, you had the classic old pictures of little Jane and little John, and you know, things were so fine-tuned and fussy, and no little kid actually looked like that. And they took a risk, and they said, well, look, what would happen if we put pictures into reading books, elementary-level reading books, where the pictures were as compelling as the story? And they hired Dr. Seuss to come in and take it and see what he could do. And what was really interesting is the first book, Dr. Seuss was given a list of 258 words that educators across the country, this is back in 1955, agreed were important for every first grader to know. And Dr. Seuss looked at that list, and the first words on the list were hat and cat. And at first he thought, this is absurd. And then he started to put the two together and came up, obviously, with Cat in the Hat. Dr. Seuss has since gone on to become one of the best-selling authors in history. And for most of the last 50 years, every kid in America has learned initially to read by looking at those books that contain those incredible pictures and those incredible catchy words. And you put the two together, perfect example of vivid.
My guest is Dan Rome. Dan, what do you see as the single biggest communication challenge facing people today?
Well, there are so many. I would say that the biggest one is, we already pointed it out, there's simply too much stuff for us to pay attention to. I mean, I try to keep on top of the news. Obviously, you keep on top of the news, and I'm willing to bet that most of your listeners make a point of wanting to know what's going on in the world. We need to do that. The trouble is, there's too much for us to handle. And on top of that, you have too many people talking in too many different ways about all of these things. The biggest challenge is simply that we're losing our ability to focus on the problems that are in front of us that we most need to, because we are so distracted by everything else. My antidote, again, sounding a little bit like a broken record, but because I believe it so much, is to say, for those problems or those solutions that are really, really worth our time, the handful of things that we've got to figure out and fix first, if they're worth our time at all, they're worth enough time to make them vivid. Let's not go flying off the handle with what seems to be the quickest fix that comes along. Let's take the time. We have the time. We really do. Vivid does not require that we sit down and we ponder things for days and days. It just gives us the tools to think more clearly, more quickly, on the handful that we really need to. Once we've gotten those things moving, then we can start to look at the other problems, too.
All right. My guest is Dan Rome, author of the book, Blah, 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 What to Do When Words Don't Work. Dan, what do you want readers to take away from reading Blah, Blah, Blah?
That it doesn't have to be this confusing, and that we don't have to be totally overwhelmed by the sheer volume of words that are flying at us through the media and through our friends and through ourselves, that there is a way to take a breath, step aside for a second and say, how do I make these ideas actually vivid? Well, I'm going to take the time, it's not a lot, to write them down and draw them out and see what emerges, and it will be more clear.
And talk to us about the connection, if you can, real quickly, between pictures, pictorial, and the creative side of your brain, because there's a definite connection there.
Oh, there absolutely is. Now, it has become real chic over this last 30 years to talk about right brain and left brain thinking. We now know enough to recognize that the simplistic view of that is not really right. A lot of the notion of, you know, our right brain being a little more creative and our left brain being more dry is been largely debunked. But one of the things that we do absolutely know, and this is unique to humans among all the mammals, is that the two hemispheres of our cerebral cortex are split into two different hemispheres. And those two hemispheres overlap in a lot of the things that they do, but there are many things that are different. And one of the hemispheres does seem to be optimized for the type of thinking that involves looking at the world in terms of little pieces, little bits. And the other hemisphere seems to be more focused on looking at the world at the bigger picture, at a more holistic, at a more synthetic level. Now, that does seem to be true. The trouble is that when we try to describe complex problems with words, the fact that words must be delivered in a linear fashion from A to B to C automatically means that we are eliminating the larger picture from most of our commentary, because we simply cannot describe it. When we want to look at a multi-layered problem, we have to be able to step back and look at it visually, because it's only there, it's only in the visual that we will be able to literally see the 3 or the 4 or the 10 different layers at the same time and see how they interact.
And that's why your book, Blah, 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 is so important. Dan, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Easy. I would direct them to danrohm.com, danrohm.com.
Danrohm.com. Dan, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, Bill. Thanks so much. My pleasure.